Hello there, and welcome to another edition of the Dad's Army podcast. Just a very quick note from me, because Oliver took care of the introduction to this particular podcast. Unfortunately, his microphone developed a bit of a problem, and the sound quality for the first 10 minutes is slightly less than you come to expect on the Dad's Army podcast. But stick with it, the content is fantastic, and when we get into the commentary, then things return to normal. Over to you, Ollie.
Episode 62 of the Dad's Army podcast. Is Oliver here? James will be joining us in a little while. He's going to be doing a commentary on Menace from the Deep, and he's joined by a very special guest. For those of you who are long-term listeners of the podcast, you will know that it wasn't always my dulcet tones that were James's partner in crime on the show. Right at the beginning, there was a lovely chap called Tony, who was James's co-host on the podcast. And so James caught up with Tony for a nice little weekend podcast reunion, and they sat down together and did a commentary just for you for Menace from the Deep. So that's coming up in a short while. Just before then, we're going to go through a little bit of feedback and also some news. So let's go over to the newsroom.
Here is the news, and this is John Snagg reading it.
Well, here we are in the newsroom. We've not been in here for a while. I thought it was about time that we went back. It's a very smart room, I'll have you know. You know, teak panelling, red leather chair, all that kind of stuff. It's absolutely marvellous. And anyway, let's get on with the news. In the Metro, I don't know if any of you read the Metro on your way into work every morning, but on the third page, where they normally have something quite uplifting, you know, to take your mind off the awful disasters that are going on this planet sometimes. On the page three, yesterday at the time of this recording, Teen builds Dad's Army shrine in shed. And it's a very nice story about a young Dad's Army fan called Darren Stride. Darren, if you're listening, hello. Darren has amazingly built a very realistic recreation of the Vicar's office in his shed. It stretches over three sheds. And quite rightly, Ross, who wrote the report, said that Captain Mannering, Sergeant Wilson, Jonesy and Pike and the rest of the gang would be proud to call it their home. Spanning three huts, including World War II Anderson shelter, Darren Stride's homemade Bygones Museum is a shrine to the classic BBC comedy Dad's Army. Darren's 19. I've actually had the pleasure of meeting Darren when we were down at Bressingham filming for part of Frank's new documentary. Darren's very, very nice lad. And he was dressed in very authentic Dad's Army costume as Pike, complete with scarf. And so, yeah, it's a lovely story that was in the Metro, and it's still online if you wanted to type it in. Google search it, it'll come up, and there's a couple of really nice pictures in there. Personally, as someone who, you know, grown up with Dad's Army, Doctor Who, older shows, I've got nothing but respect for a fellow fan who embraces his love for a classic show. And also, fair play to your mum and dad, Darren, for actually you know, giving you the support to fulfil your ambition, using pretty much half of their garden as a Dad's Army shrine. And as Darren points out in the article, people have been popping by, you know, strangers knocking on the door saying, can we come and see the Bygones Museum? And I believe it's been shortlisted for the best, I think it's a shed competition of people building wonderful things in their sheds. Competition, stiff as it is, from someone who's apparently built the TARDIS in their shed. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the... You were expecting that. Anyway, let's move on to a bit more news. Well, this next bit of news should be easy for me to talk about because it's about me and several of my colleagues at work filming a brand new HD expanded version of Dad's Army and Beyond. The reason I'm bringing this up is because Dad's Army and Beyond, the Frank Williams story, is in its own right a 30-minute documentary. It was shown at the British Film Institute. It's where I first had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Rockliffe, and I still can't get rid of him. Don't tell him I said that. So that documentary in its own right is something that I'm personally very proud of. And the plan was originally to get that documentary onto DVD. It's amazing in the 5 years since it was made and the 3 years since it was shown at the BFI how much technology has come on. And so nowadays, to try and get something out there into the broadcast or DVD world, pretty much has got to be in high definition. And so I was chatting with the BBC. They are working on upscaling Dad's Army into high definition. That's, the technology is there. They have the power. So they're doing a lot of tests at the moment. So potentially, Dad's Army could be making its Blu-ray DVD release in the not-too-distant future. As such, they are, therefore, on the lookout for HD special features to accompany this. And so, throughout my discussions with the Beeb, I decided, well, let's try and expand Dad's Army and Beyond into a high-definition documentary. And that's currently underway. In the next podcast, I'm going to have a more detailed report, some behind the scenes, a short interview with Frank, so you really get an idea of this new documentary and hopefully what we'll be able to do with it. But in the meantime, I'd be very grateful if you could let me know any ideas you have for the title of the documentary. I don't want to name it Dad's Army and Beyond again, because that is a previous documentary in its own right. So what do you think? A documentary about Frank Williams, what could we call it? Please do email us, james@dadsarmypodcast.com or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com, or let us know on Twitter. Great news, Willie Thorn, the snooker player, is now following me on Twitter. That is the highlight of my day, that's hot off the press. I'm really rather pleased about that. So Willie, if you're listening, let us know. What do you think? A documentary about Frank Williams, what should we call it? Please do let us know, and we will read out your suggestions in a future podcast. Now, shortly you'll be hearing the commentary on Menace from the Deep with James and Tony. Just before then, I've got a couple of emails to read out for you, some feedback. First is from John Hale. Hi, James and Oliver. First up, many thanks for your fine efforts on keeping the flame of Dad's Army alive. I first started watching this as a little boy with my parents. Now that I became a dad 2 weeks ago, my son has yet to watch an episode, but he will when I can wrestle my Dad's Army box set off my parents. Something about safekeeping, they say. Well, congratulations to you, John, for becoming a dad, and absolutely keep the Dad's Army spirit alive. John continues, I thoroughly enjoyed your trial of Corporal Jones. I think I will have to side slightly with James on this, as I found Jones ever so slightly over the top. Wicket-keeper antics were my limit. I'm sure James will be delighted that someone's in his corner. But John continues that he would also like the idea of further character trials and reviews. I vote Wilson. Okay, I vote them all, but him first. His relationship with Mrs. Pike, Mannering Pike, provides enough cannon fodder for 3 episodes. All good contrasts. His complacency to do anything unless forced to which in some cases he shows how much a man he can be by fighting the Irish fellows. I wouldn't see this as a trial, more than as an attempt to define him. Couldn't agree more. Wilson is one of my favourite Wilson is pretty much my favourite character. I think John Lemess is fantastic. And also, as an aside, my mum and dad have just bought a baby puppy dog, whom they've called Wilson, after good old Sergeant Wilson. So, there we go. John continues, I would also ask if there are any episodes you cannot watch. My father will not watch A. Wilson Manager, as he feels so bad for Wilson losing both the manager's position and the captaincy of a platoon. Again, it shows the nasty, jealous side of Mannering, who incidentally would also make a great character review. There is a lot of material still to cover. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, John. A. Wilson Manager, I think, is a very poignant episode. I'm a fan of the pathos of Dad's Army, which they always did so very, very well. And, you know, let's face it, if Wilson had become manager, then he'd have left the series about halfway through. So, personally, I'm quite glad of that episode. And also, it's a little, I mean, you know, Mannering's annoyed, but Wilson's a little bit smug, you know, in the first half of the episode. Everyone's intentions are good, I think. But, yeah, I know what you mean. It's perhaps an unpleasant watch, but for me personally, I think it's a marvellous episode, and the moment where Where Wilson picks up his manager's, A. Wilson manager, door sign and walks away and have a very amazing classical music over the top. It's a special moment, an episode to be savoured. Piece of feedback, and then you can sit back and relax and listen to James and Tony talk about Menace from the Deep. This feedback is from Jerry Donaldson. Hello, Jerry. Thank you very much for your email. Jerry writes, my name is Jerry and I'm from Glasgow. I got myself an iPod a few months back and happened to find your Dad's Army podcast on the iTunes site, and I'm so glad I did. It's taken me a while, but I am now up to date with all your podcasts. I was born in 1975, so I was too young to remember the series on the first time around. I'm not 100% sure what the first episode of Dad's Army I saw, but it may have been Time on My Hands. Same here. The only reason I say this is because not long after watching the episode, I went into town with my mum to see if the episode was available on video to buy, but it wasn't at the time. I ended up buying a video with the episodes The Day the Balloon Went Up, Sons of the Sea, and Don't Forget the Diver. After watching these three episodes, I was hooked, and whenever I had enough pocket money saved up, I'd buy another video with three episodes on it. One of my favourite episodes is Branded. The whole episode is well written, and I like the small twist at the end of the episode when it turns out that Godfrey came to rescue several wounded soldiers on no man's land under heavy fire. It's fair to say that Branded is certainly one of James's favourite episodes, and indeed, I firmly believe it's one of the best in the series. We really do want to cover Branded in depth in the near future, and we're trying to get the director of that episode, Harold Snowd, on board, so we'll keep you posted. Perhaps if you all write in and say how much you'd like to hear Harold Snowd's memories of working on Branded, it might persuade him to come on down and meet James and I. I totally agree, Jerry. Who continues, I also wanted to say that currently on BBC Radio 4 Extra, they are playing the first series of the Dad's Army radio show. It's on in a Saturday at 2:30 p.m. The episode is repeated on the Sunday at 8:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. As I write this, they have just played episode 10, Battle School. Loving the podcast and can't wait for the next one. Well, thank you very much, certainly for bringing that to my attention, Jerry. Hopefully, Some of the rest of you will find that very interesting and can tune in to the Dad's Army radio show, currently being broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra. I haven't heard any of the Dad's Army radio episodes, so I've got no excuse. It's bound to be on iPlayer as well, so perhaps I'll have a cheeky listen sometime. Well, that's it from me. I hope you've enjoyed that little bit of news and a couple of bits of feedback. Next episode, you're going to have some behind the scenes of the new Frank Williams documentary, which I hope you shall email me in to suggest some titles. Please do email james@dadsarmypodcast.com or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. You can follow us both on Twitter, twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/olivercrocker. Very shortly, you're going to hear a countdown, and then once you hear that countdown, press play on your DVD player, and you can listen to the thoughts of the original Dad's Army podcast hosts, James and Tony. In the meantime, that's all from me, and I'm going to go and have a glass of wine. All the best. Bye.
Three, two, one, play.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast. And as Oliver said, we're joined on this occasion by a very special guest. Tony, welcome back to the Dad's Army podcast.
Hi there.
It's been some time, I think, since you sat down, had a little chat about Dad's Army with us.
I've been trying to stop you coming round, but I had to give in the end.
Well, I'm very glad that you did. And this episode that we're doing a commentary on is your choice.
It's called Menace from the Deep.
It is. And what is it that's about this episode that that made you think, yes, I could sit here and talk for 30 minutes non-stop about this?
Yeah, I haven't got a clue. I like the bit that they're on the pier, though, so there's good scenes and good imagination used there.
Absolutely. And this is an episode that I haven't seen in some time, so it's going to be quite interesting just sitting down and watching an episode.
Yeah, if you could just stop talking, I might be able to watch it.
Kind of defeats the object of commentaries.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we've got an interesting scene here again. At the beginning of an episode, we've got two guest actors here who are not members of the regular platoon. And, of course, the traditional opening of any Dad's Army episode is usually a church hall scene of some kind.
Yeah, line up.
Now, these two guest actors, one of whom, I believe, is Larry Martin.
Oh, he does the voice for Walker, doesn't he, on the radio? Yep, on the radio episodes. Which one? Left or right?
I think, as we're looking, it's the one on the left. And obviously, our knowledge of Dad's Army is encyclopedic, but it does help occasionally to have a book when you're watching these things. And I will have a quick look, and I'll tell you who the other one is in a second. But this is quite a prolonged little scene. I'd say, what, 30 seconds, 45 seconds of setup for the episode?
Yeah.
Tony, you're looking at me in a little bit of a confused look.
Who wants to know how long it takes?
I just think it's because it's different to a normal setup, to a normal opening. And when you've got episodes featuring the same characters using the same kind of comedy week in, week out, it's interesting to see how the writers mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
There you are. Did that explain it clearly enough for you? And makes you wonder again why they're having this lecture in the side office as opposed to the main hall, and I can only assume it's because the church hall set was being used for something else, perhaps the actual pier itself.
Oh yes, yeah.
Because I know that they were limited on studio space, but do you think that briefings like this create a different feel to the episodes to when they're doing it in the church hall, and it's a bit more official, all standing up and paying attention?
I think the variety is good. I think something which changes it from the normal lineup makes a good change.
No, I agree. One of the things that Oliver and I have spoken about in the past is all of these chalk drawings. Now, I would love at some point for somebody to go through all of Dad's Army
and list them all.
Yeah. And actually reproduce them.
Which other ones can you remember then?
Oh, goodness me, that's extremely difficult. Sergeant, save my boy.
There's one where a senior officer comes in and says he thought it was a trolley bus. And what was it, a tank?
That's one of, I think you may have picked up on the first episode ever there, possibly.
What else? So we're looking at one of the pier at the minute with the break in it. What else?
Oh, there's one in Don't Forget the Diver. There's quite a few. And despite mentioning it a few times on a podcast, I've never had anyone email in and tell me who precisely it was who drew those things. But, yeah, they must have had an official chalk drawer. that's all I could assume. Yeah, Larry Martin was in the opening scene, along with Bill Treacher, who is the other actor.
In one of the original episodes, was he?
No, he was in the opening to this episode. He was in the scene, just the two guys at the end of the pier. And Bill Treacher.
Oh, that's out of EastEnders, isn't it?
I think so. For some reason, I feel that I should really know
he is.
But I don't.
Arthur Fowler, I'm not meant to know that.
Oh, what was it really? Oh, well, I'm really impressed. If it is, but well done. He doesn't ring any bells, but... But yes, now we're on to some location shooting here, and one of the commentaries that we've recorded fairly recently is Sons of the Sea. And during that recording, I said that I really enjoy Dad's Army episodes that features a boat. There seems to be...
This is one of my favourite bits you're talking over now. It's just mannering, pretending to be an expert, and not being one.
No, I think it's... Again, playing to possibly the stereotypical character traits that you see in Manor in. And pompous, I know what I'm doing, when he so clearly, he doesn't. And I think at one point, just to fit in with the script, John Laurie deliberately moves the boat away. And I quite like this as well, because you've got the four members of the platoon just sitting there, basically watching this disaster unfold. I wonder where this was filmed. I'll see whether or not it's listed in this highly useful reference book. Yeah, it's Britannia Pier in Great Yarmouth. So, do you know, I wonder whether they just decided to get a boat and start filming, or whether there was any kind of permission that they needed to seek first, because, of course, this is some location filming that wasn't done on Stanta. So it's not necessarily something that they were very used to.
So now we've got the scene on the pier.
Do you feel that the location scene, obviously shot on film, is in any way jarring when you see the set in the studio?
I think seeing the set as we're looking at now is great. I just think that's really, really well done.
I wonder if it was built specially for this particular episode. It's quite possible.
Definitely.
I know that set builders and designers are quite ingenious when they reuse bits of set.
Oh, yeah.
So you wonder whether you've seen this in other episodes as well. But one thing that I am impressed with, though, the set within this episode that we're watching now, when you see it...
Church Hall, isn't it? Sorry to interrupt. It looks like the Church Hall.
It may well be. And there isn't a Church Hall scene in this episode, so that could explain...
So that's why they were in the side office at the start. Sorry, I'm ahead of you on this, or behind you.
Well, you might be right. It's just a guess. But what I was saying is that the way that they've designed the doors was modelled on a real pier. Because at the end of the episode, you've got location shots again when they're on a real pier, obviously the one in Great Yarmouth. And they look identical. So obviously they've modelled the set on a real pier. The typical power struggle here again. Mannerin at pains to say that he's democratic and he doesn't abuse his power, but clearly wants to have the hammock first. And I like the interplay between him and Wilson there, where he ends up... they both stamp their foot. Mannerin metaphorically and Wilson physically. Do you have a particular... favourite character, would you say, in these kind of episodes, what takes them out of the ordinary sets and environment?
I think the Mannering and Wilson in this is brilliant. No, I think they're all good. I mean, I chose this episode because of it's one with Walker in it, and I wanted Walker included in this one. I think they're all good.
What is it about James Beck, you think, appeals to you in particular?
I think the platoon is incomplete without him, in a way. There is just something missing. He's not my favourite character, but you don't want him to be missing from the platoon either.
No, I know precisely what you mean. It did feel different after he died. This is a couple of years before his final episode, but he does contribute something to the team dynamic, I think, and human resources person might say, that was never really replaced. And this is John Laurie being absolutely, I don't know, I was going to say he's at his most Fraser-ish, because he's spooky, haunted, attention grabbing, and turns out he's having a joke.
And his hair's been done for this, it looks, as well.
You think there were times when they deliberately made his hair look more mad than other times?
Yes.
He was actually a Shakespearean actor, and he'd worked with Laurence Olivier and so on long before he became a household name, John Laurie. And I just find it funny that he's actually parodying a serious play there. To humorous effect. He does it brilliantly. gets to a point in Dad's Army where you think this isn't really a Dad's Army episode until you've heard the Fraser episode, or the Fraser story, sorry. Do you not feel that the 24-hour clock gags drag?
No, happy to have those in.
I see you smiling.
No, I like those. It's Wilson's opportunity to get one up on Mannering. So, no, they're good. I always find myself checking what they're saying when they're having talk about the 24-hour clock, just to check it's right.
Yes. Yes. This was actually transmitted in 1969. This one went out. It always strikes me as a later episode, but it's not. It was within, you know, the first year or so of Dad's Army actually starting. So they really did churn out episodes. You know, they did the first two series in the same year, and then this was halfway through the next series, season three. It attracted. I just had the viewing figure there, and now it's gone, but it was significant. Yeah, 13.3 million viewers, which, compared to today's audiences, is, it's phenomenally good. But obviously, you're comparing apples with golf balls, really, in today's multi-channel society. First time we've seen Jones, really, here, and... Yep. Making his contribution. Now, this is quite interesting because they do this in a couple of episodes. They all start talking about food, and they're clearly getting quite excited.
And they're not going to get any.
No. Gastronomic orgy, I believe it's referred to as.
By Wilson.
I think so.
Yes. A positive gastronomic
orgy.
Have I got that wrong?
No, I think you're right. And this is Ian Lavender again. Because it's an early episode, you can hear him talking a slightly different way, and his Brummy accent is coming through very clearly here. And that only came through in the later episodes when the character became quite excited.
I like the way that they've managed to lose the food and the telephone line in one go.
Mm. I think perhaps the way that they planned this story, you know, it's a lot of Dad's Armies, you start off quite calmly and it gradually descends into chaos, and you can see the points in the story where the chaos escalates. And you're right, you got the point here where they got no food, their communication is cut off, and then Mannering's bullishness kicks in. We're going to sort this out. How are we going to get... rescued or saved? And obviously Wilson doesn't take any of it seriously. He sits there reading a magazine. Absolutely no laughter from the audience there, which is until now, which is quite rare. This is another example. You think of some of the episodes in the past where they find themselves in pickles, and each of them in turn come up with solutions as to how to get out of it. And you got Walker just coming up with an idea now about signalling. I think
this is where the window gets stuck, isn't it?
Yep. What, the cardboard window?
Is it cardboard?
I don't know. It looks like it might be. I think what gets me is Wilson's attitude is too laid back here to be completely true to character, because he doesn't seem bothered about it in the slightest, and he's not contributing at all. See, quite negative, and I think Mannering gets quite cross with him.
I think you do that sometimes. If someone is getting stressed, you will deliberately not get stressed.
But I think on this occasion it's certainly not helping the situation. It's probably making things worse, and it's certainly winding Mannering up a bit more as he feels the situation is gradually getting away from him. I think this would be a good episode to to try and demonstrate how team dynamics actually work. And I think, you know, Manorin is used in lots of... I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it.
Motivational stuff.
Yes, you know when you're at work and someone decides to send you on these courses that you really don't think are worth the time of day, either about leadership or teamwork or something, and you can pick out bits of Dad's Army episodes, little scenes, to say, oh, that's an example of good leadership. And then you can pick out some other parts and say, that's an appalling of absolutely diabolical leadership. And it's funny how Menorin's character, you know, veers, because there are times when he's absolutely brilliant.
I think he is a good leader, actually, in all seriousness.
Why?
He has quite a lot of leadership skills.
What is it that's making you say that?
He makes sure he's in charge. He is prepared to lead and do things first. He doesn't always react, doesn't always fly off the handle when something goes wrong. No, I think he is a good leader. The character is a good leader.
What about when he takes his platoon, you know, like you say...
I think he just makes too many mistakes, actually.
Yeah.
I'm probably overanalyzing this, but he's got all the leadership qualities, but just makes too many mistakes to be good.
I think there are times when the platoon know he's making incorrect decisions, and they just follow him blindly, almost. And that is the reason why they end up in so many of these ridiculous positions. But we've just seen our first glance of Bill Pertwee this particular episode. And again, he features quite clearly. Now, Oliver says one of his most memorable scenes for Hodges is in this episode, which is coming up a little bit later, and perhaps I'll point out to you at the time. But this is another time when Bill Pertwee finds himself swimming in the sea. And this is in Lowestoft. So it's actually filmed in a different place to where they recorded the platoon getting into the boat.
I like this, because don't they threaten to shoot him or something? They nearly wipe out Hodges.
Pretty much, yeah. They don't know what's coming. I don't know whether this works, this particular sequence, because if you look, you've got Pike at the back there. He's looking down a ladder. Here we are. Come over here, look. There's a thing coming up the ladder. All it is a wet Hodges. So I think that stretches the bounds of believability a little bit, see? And we have the comedy spitting water out.
Which doesn't do anything for me.
No, me neither. And I wonder what they did. He's in the studio, and clearly he needs to be wet, so they just chuck a bucket of water over him. I quite like this as well. It's you've got Manorin, who's in a position of authority and reasonably established, and Hodges, this is the time when he talks about getting his brand new uniform, and of course it's all wet, and that's all part of the joke, but it also builds his character up a little bit, because he's establishing a professional role within war to play, because it makes him a little bit more on a par with Manorin.
Yeah,
he's got a uniform, got a white helmet, got some status. And there are times in other episodes he says, well, look, this white helmet, it means something, you know.
Godfrey sticks up for him in one episode and says he does an important job, and he does it terribly well or something like that.
Right.
Godfrey sticks up for the need for the ARP.
Yeah, I think you're right. I wonder if that's in Uninvited Guests. He says that he performs a role under difficult circumstances. It's funny because in Time on My Hands, Godfrey is very confrontational with Hodges, and he calls him a very rude man when he's at the bottom of the clock tower. So, interesting dynamic Hodges has with each of the characters, I think. And we've got Fraser here, and this is one of the first allusions to his miserly qualities, because the reason he's distancing himself here is he doesn't want to put any pennies into the chocolate machine. Which I think is a bit of a cardboard prop here again. Again, it serves its purpose.
The machine.
Yeah. And especially the sounds. Now, I know we can't hear the sound particularly well and we're talking over it anyway.
I've hardly heard anything since this episode started.
Yeah, so I have to try and point out the whole point of a commentary episode. Strange as it may seem, listeners are not going to enjoy listening to us watching the episode. But what I find quite interesting is that this little model thing here works independently of anyone actually working the controls. Yeah. Jones taking on his fairly, it's not fair role again, a little bit of a child quality. He stomps his feet because he can't play with the controls. There you are. Look, Frey's having a right gap manner in. And the crane working itself. I like the way they create quite a bit of suspense and the way the camera moves in. Leads up to quite a big laugh there. So.
Who hits it?
What, the
machine? Is it Wilson?
It had to be Walker.
Well, I think it's Walker and the radio plays then.
Okay, maybe you're right. Yeah, you
could
be. That's
why I've just had a bit of doubt about it.
So you mean you think Walker does it in the radio plays or Wilson does it in the radio plays?
I think Wilson does it in the radio plays. Am I wrong?
You may well be right, because a lot of the lines were reallocated. And not only that, remember, they never had a full cast within a radio play, so they always shared out some lines.
I might have got that bit wrong.
Well, no, I mean, they recorded the radio shows with a reduced cast in order to save a bit of money. And so the lines were redistributed a lot of the time. So you may well be right. But it's funny, it doesn't really seem like a Wilson role, though, does it? To bash the machine and try and get chocolate out for free.
I agree.
It's much more of a Walker thing, isn't it?
Yep.
So, also, he eats the whole lot before anybody else realises it's cardboard. I think this is quite a good Fraser episode. So, yeah. Polishes it off quick, and again he just fades to black on a really funny look.
It was his penny.
There were his pennies indeed. And I lose track of the number of times we see Pike sleeping with his thumb in his mouth throughout the years, but it is a number when they go on manoeuvres and stuff, so it's fairly consistent.
Mannering looks like a dead body there.
I hadn't really thought of that. But yes, I think you're probably right. Now, I mentioned earlier that Oliver has a favourite part where it comes to...
What, Fraser in his underpants?
Not Fraser.
Oh, well,
that must be one of your other interests.
I'm getting old. Him, yeah. Hodges.
Yes. And I'll have to admit, it is a very brave moment. I mean, when you think you've got an entire studio audience there, you know, and you're standing there in your pants. Why do you think they desperate, or Wilson is so keen to mention the cricket all the time? I mean, I know that it's a plot point, it's leading up to the final scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think that's the only reason it's in there.
But it's interesting the way you see the way the writers set these things up. Do you know what I mean? That's quite an interesting special effect, the water coming through the floor of the pier. And presumably it's just someone with a water pistol.
But what's that got to do with anything, though? That is literally there to make them go outside and have a look, yeah?
Do you know, that is an exceptionally good point. Yeah, no, I've never thought about that before. It's used purely as a scene opener so that Jones looks through the floor. And not only that, a tide would never spurt up like that, ever, would it?
I don't know.
I think
permission to wake you up, sir.
So, I mean, this is supposed to happen throughout the period of an entire night, isn't it? The whole episode. And, you know, because obviously by the time they go out in the morning, it's daytime. And I like the way that they cut up the scenes. I think we may have seen the last one now. But when they fade to black, play some music over it, it's meant to indicate the passage of time. And it's quite subtly done.
Something else about this episode, I guess it's nearly all on the pier. So this is one episode where it's all in one place that we haven't seen before and we don't see again in other episodes.
Mm. I wonder if it's the Jolly Roger pier.
In Sergeant Save My Boy.
Hmm. I think the Jolly Roger pier is mentioned a few times, isn't it? Throughout Dad's Army time, same as Timothy White and the Novelty Rock Emporium.
And Stone's Amusement Arcade.
There you go, yes. Novelty Rock Emporium. That's the best collection of words in Dad's Army. I love it. I can't help but laugh at Bill Pertwee there. He must have got pneumonia in this. I mean, we switch back outside to the real pier now.
Yeah.
And now that mine, do you think that's a prop? Do you think it's a real lump of metal or?
Oh, I don't know.
Hard to say, isn't it? Now that shot,
that looks like it could be real, actually.
But the shot just before it, you had the characters in the same shot as the mine. So it makes you wonder what, you know, whether it was contrived somehow or whether or not they've intercut like that, for instance. That couple of he's back in again. A couple of seconds. No, there you are, look, he's being chased. He's chasing Hodges. It's gotta be a prop, isn't it? But Bill Pertwee certainly, I think, must have caught pneumonia. I think it's three times that he's in the sea. He falls out of the boat. He's just fallen in again there. And they must have drenched him when he was on the studio. So he fell in twice. And he genuinely looks freezing there. But this is the shot of the pier I was telling you about. This is an actual location. This is an actual pier. And the set that we saw earlier, it's very, very, very similar to what you're seeing now. And quite a rare shot there of the platoon actually firing weapons. You don't see them shooting very much, do you?
They're usually a bit short on ammunition as well, aren't they? But they seem to have quite a lot there.
Another good point. Yes, it's usually only five rounds home guards were issued with. And all of a sudden, Hodges is over his hangover to the point where he can bowl beautifully. And again, you'd wonder whether that explosion was something that was from stock footage or whether they actually exploded something in the sea. And if so, whether they actually had to have permission for some kind of special effect like that. So, interesting. So, I mean, all in all, did that episode go quickly for you?
Well, I like that. Now, could I watch it again now without you talking through it?
You don't need my permission to. Permission to watch again, sir. So, Tony, thank you very much indeed for joining us once again. Let's hope it's not going to be another 2.5 years before you come back on the podcast.
Well, that's fine. Thank you for letting me watch one of my favourite programmes.
That's no problem whatsoever. Bye for now.